What the fuck is happening, fam? It is your boy, the Sultan of Sativa, the Ayatollah of Indica, the Bobby Fischer of BHO, a.k.a. the Gordon Ryan of Ganj, a.k.a. Ned Sparks, a.k.a. Willie the Cool Penguin, a.k.a. the President of the United States of America, Donald Blunt, a.k.a. Dro Hyden, a.k.a. Lord Baltimore. And we're here tonight with another brand spanking new episode of the number one canon podcast on the planet. Let's talk about it. It's a pleasure to have you here this evening. Sunday, ready to bust out a little sermon. I feel pretty good, pretty good about this one. I actually did a little preparation work. Excuse me. Did something I said I was going to do. I got an iPad, a new iPad, and actually put together some notes, put together some things that I wanted to talk about here today, tonight. And the first thing that I wanted to talk about, and I didn't put this in my notes, but it is something that should be talked about. You as a listener of this podcast have a moral obligation to share it with whomever you see fit, whether that's somebody you like, it's somebody you don't like. It doesn't matter. Just share it with somebody, because even if you pissed them off, then we're getting some listens. Okay? And that's what's key here, is that the message is getting out there, whether it's to somebody that loves it or hates it. Maybe they'll listen to it. Maybe they'll be like me, and they'll be open-minded enough to listen to somebody that they don't agree with or don't actually like. It's weird. It's weird to do that when you think about it, because I don't know about you, but I can get in my own little bubbles with the certain podcasts, people that I listen to, and the amount of content they put out. Sometimes it could be hard to incorporate some new shit. And, but it is important, even if the whole time you're fucking cringing, you think the person you're listening to is a fucking idiot. But if they're an idiot, it should be good, because it'll solidify your perspective a little bit. You can at least contemplate what makes them an idiot. Which one of their beliefs, what part of their thought process is fucking stupid, you know? That's how I like to do it. This weekend was kind of a big weekend for me. I got my purple belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Practically a ninja. Practically a modern-day samurai. We have a lot in common, me and the samurai of old. You know, I'm a shark. And the ground is my ocean. And most people are just minnows. Or whatever the fucking saying is that John Donahue said, or fucking Jeff Glover, whichever one of these fucks said it. But I got my purple belt. It's been about 3 years, maybe actually a little less. Which, if you don't know, in the jiu-jitsu realm is pretty quick, you know? And the reality is, there doesn't seem to be any set. I mean, there is kind of some rules. I think the general guideline is 2 years per belt, right? You know, white belt, year and a half, 2 years, depending on what you're fucking doing. And that's about what it took for me. Purple belt, 2 years, right? They say the average black belt's probably about 10 years to get. At what point is that person training? How often are they training? Is it 2 times a week? Is it 4 times a week? Is it 6 times a week? You know, a lot of weeks, I train 6 to 10 hours. Whereas most people are training 2-3 times a week. That's 3-4 hours a week. You know, some weeks I get more in if I'm fortunate or not exhausted. Although right now I'm on day 20, 75 hard, 21, day 21 of 75 hard. And I'm kind of in a bad mood. Been kind of in a bad mood. Got some shit going on in my personal life that, you know, mixed with the cold and the rain and the pain, just really I'm not in the fucking mood for. That's okay. You know, 75 hard can get, it bees like that sometimes. Sometimes it is a very lonely personal journey. That's why many people start and then fail. They quit. I honestly wanted to quit multiple times this weekend and almost did. But I really had to have some conversations with myself, say, no, stop being a bitch, just fucking do the shit. You know, you haven't fucking done it in a while, and it's fucking time. And you've tried and failed since then. You've been being a bitch. Some people don't understand talking to yourself like that. They're like, you have to be positive. You have to be positive. But I try to take principles and apply them into my life, right? And if I tell myself it's okay, it's okay, it's okay all the time, it stops fucking being okay. And that just is the norm. Being a bitch is a norm. You know, when it should be the other way around, it should be discipline, discipline, discipline. And then give myself a little reward, give myself a little treat, right? Because the reality is that I'm not where I want to be, and I don't believe that I can get there by just fucking telling myself it's okay. You know, shit is hard. A lot of things in my life have changed over the last few years. And, you know, I'm feeling a little lost. Feeling like, you know, I'm needing a pivot. But I know that all it takes is one fucking phone call, one fucking networking event, one fucking email sent, one new client, and everything can change. So, you know, I don't live with a famine mindset. I just find ways to keep it trucking. I look at what's going on around me, and I try to call it as I see it and keep it fucking fair. Shit ain't even fair. And that's okay. Because I don't stress. I don't hate on greatness. I love it. I actually love when people are succeeding around me and seeing that and watching that. You know, I got a personal friend that's lost over 100 pounds, and he's also on 75 hard with me. This motherfucker's up at 5 a.m. getting workouts done. Had a very important conversation with him where he was talking about one of his workouts. He didn't feel like it was enough of a workout, like he could have given more. So he ended up going and getting a third workout in, which is something I've done many a time. And many days, it's just kind of a regular occurrence, just based on what my schedule looks like and what I try to have my training schedule looking like. Because jiu-jitsu is something that's been very important to me. And you know, to circle back, over the last 3 years is really something that I've been able to bond with my kids a little bit, use it as a tool to help teach my kids, have some of these lessons kind of fortified by seeing friends doing the same thing, making friends with other kids on the mat. The relationships that I've created have been invaluable. Shout out to all the homies that listen to this podcast that I roll with on a regular basis, share the mats with in any way, shape, or form, that are there for me in any way, shape, or form outside of just the fucking jiu-jitsu mats. That shit is great. You know, it's honestly, I've really been thinking about it, reflecting on how this, in a way, has replaced, you know, the NA community I once had, which obviously I left and, you know, started doing my own thing, drinking a little bit here and there, smoking big weed, which doesn't really coincide with the 12 steps and traditions of, you know, any 12-step program, which is fine. And now I think things have changed a little bit. You know, a good friend of mine from the program one time had a buddy of his going through some injuries, didn't want to be on like pain pills. So they searched some alternative routes, came to your boy, talked about utilizing some cannabis and some CBD, and we made it happen. Guy was in recovery, didn't count it as a clean time loss. Wasn't really a free lapse. You know, the guy was in fucking serious pain and had genuine concerns about what it would be like. Even though under a doctor's supervision, quote unquote, taking fucking, you know, opiates, which I'm very fortunate to have been in a position where my friend, you know, I could be somebody that a good friend of mine trusted. You know, that has a lot of clean time, a lot of respect from me and others in the, in that world. Actually has a really fucking badass outpatient facility, the Glass House. If you're feeling fucked up, need some therapy, to Ellicott City, Maryland. Reach out to them, Glass House Recovery. That's free promo just because I believe in their mission. I believe in the founder, Steve, and Sarah's vision, the way that they help people. That shit is real deal. So if you're somebody that's still out there struggling with the disease and dis-ease of active addiction and you're in the Maryland area, these are some people to reach out to. And to be honest, you could reach out to them anyway, no matter where you're at, because these are people that will actually go above and beyond to try to help you help yourself. And that's all I'm up with. But jiu-jitsu, you know, it's a place to work out problems, to solve out life issues. It's honesty in its purest form. You're in the moment. There is no thinking about being somewhere else. It's right then, right there, or you're going to sleep, or somebody's going to put you in a position where they could break a bone, shatter some fucking tendons, destroy your body. So you must be present and aware of what the fuck is happening. You know, there's a lot going on in the fucking world. We're about a month in January. I see fat activism at an all-time high, right? People, you know, people being fucking indoctrinated by propaganda. It's propaganda. Fat activism is propaganda perpetrated by the sugar industry. You know, that's part of the reason why I started working with people, doing some coaching, trying to help people change their lives, and not just not by just doing some diet, right? How to really fucking change some of their habits, right? Change their relationship with food, change their relationship with working out, right? It's a bummer because some people stick with it more than others, right? Some people complain about not getting results, you know, because they didn't do the work. You know, you can't complain about results you didn't get by not doing work. You have to work at it. You know, it's a mental and physical thing. You have to do it. And even on the days you don't want to do it, you got to do it. That's discipline. Discipline is the rules we set for ourselves. But like, people don't understand that fat activism and the downplaying of sugar in America, and sugar just as a, like, I mean, they really try to tell you that meat, beef is terrible. I mean, there's been, everybody's seen that new food pyramid where they said Lucky Charms are healthier than red meat, Lucky Charms are healthier than cheese, than fried egg fried in butter. Frosted mini wheats are like literally the healthiest thing on the planet, according to this food pyramid thing. But this is an article I found from a few years ago. It's actually from 2016, New York Times, how the sugar industry shifted blame to fat. The sugar industry paid scientists in the 1960s to play down the link between sugar and heart disease and promote saturated fat as the culprit instead. Newly released historical documents show. The internal sugar industry documents recently discovered by a researcher at the University of California, San Francisco, and published Monday in JAMA Internal Medicine suggest that five decades of research into the role of nutrition in heart disease, including many of today's dietary recommendations, may have been largely shaped by the sugar industry. That's fucking crazy. The sugar industry is shaping dietary recommendations. And guess what? They're probably going to shape them around justifying you to be able to eat a bunch of sugary bullshit. Here's a quote. They were able to derail the discussion about sugar for decades, said Stanton Glantz, a professor of medicine at UCSF, an author at the JAMA Internal Medicine paper. The documents show that a trade group called the Sugar Research Foundation, known today as the Sugar Association, paid three Harvard scientists the equivalent of about $50,000 in today's dollars to publish a 1967 review of research on sugar, fat, and heart disease. The studies used in the review were handpicked by the Sugar Group, and the article, which was published in the prestigious New England Journal of Medicine, minimized the link between sugar and heart health and cast aspersions on the role of saturated fat. Which, if you're concerned about saturated fat, I would recommend checking out Dr. Paul Saladino on Instagram. He's CarnivoreMD 2.0. But his podcast, it's like Optimal Health Podcast, something like that. But he has a lot of really scientific stuff about saturated fat, LDLs, and kind of the lies that we are told surrounding those. Obviously, he has kind of a bias towards an animal-based diet. But in that, he is very scientific and does utilize a lot of stuff. So I would check him out. Somebody that I've kind of been listening to a little bit lately. But anyway, back to the article. Even though the influence peddling revealed in the documents dates back nearly 50 years, more recent reports show that the food industry has continued to influence nutrition science. Last year, an article in the New York Times revealed that Coca-Cola, the world's largest producer of sugary beverages, had provided millions of dollars in funding to researchers who sought to play down the link between sugary drinks and obesity. In June, the Associated Press reported that candy makers were funding studies that claimed that children who eat candy tend to weigh less than those who do not. Yeah, that's, I mean, that's, you know, I mean, I would assume the science there is because they're not getting the proper nutrients, so they're fucking skinny but not healthy, as the fatties will tell you. Their skinny does not equate healthy, right? That doesn't, just because you're skinny. I was skinny as shit when I was shooting dope, but I assure you, I was eating lots of candy, and I was not healthy at all. I couldn't lift weight for shit. The Harvard scientists and sugar executives with whom they collaborated are no longer alive. One of the scientists who was paid by the sugar industry was D. Mark Hegstead, who went on to become the head of nutrition at the United States Department of Agriculture, where in 1977 he helped draft the forerunner to the federal government's dietary guidelines. Another was Dr. Frederick J. Stare. Frederick J. Stare, the chairman of the Harvard's nutrition department. Holy shit, dude. In a statement responding to the JAMA Journal's report, the Sugar Association said that the 1967 review was published at a time when medical journals did not typically require researchers to disclose funding sources. The New England Journal of Medicine did not begin to require financial disclosures until 1984. The industry should have exercised greater transparency in all of the research activities, the Sugar Association statement said. Even so, it defended industry-funded research as playing an important and informative role in scientific debate. It said that the several decades of research had concluded that sugar does not have a unique role in heart disease. It doesn't, dude. At all. Especially not fucking processed fake sugars. Those are straight. They're good for you. The revelations are important because the debate about the relative harms of sugar and saturated fat continues today, Dr. Glantz said. For many decades, health officials encouraged Americans to reduce their fat intake, which led many people to consume low-fat, high-sugar foods that some experts now blame for fueling the obesity crisis. Yeah, isn't that crazy? It was a smart thing that the sugar industry did because review papers, especially if you get them published in a very prominent journal, tend to shape the overall scientific discussion, he said. Oh, wow. You mean kind of like how things have been the last 3 years with these COVID studies? Huh. Weird. Dr. Hegstead used his research to influence the government's dietary recommendation, which emphasized saturated fat as a driver of heart disease, while largely characterizing sugar as empty calories linked to tooth decay. Today, the saturated fat warnings remain a cornerstone of the government's dietary guidelines, though in recent years, the American Heart Association, the World Health Organization, and other health authorities have also begun to warn that too much added sugar may increase cardiovascular disease risk. Would you look at that? Marion Nestle, a professor of nutrition, food studies, and public health at New York University, wrote an editorial accompanying the new paper in which she said the documents provided compelling evidence that the sugar industry had initiated research expressly to exonerate sugar as a major risk factor for coronary heart disease. I think it's appalling, she said. You just never see examples that are this blatant. Yeah, the fuck you do. Dr. Walter Willett, chairman of the nutrition department at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health, said the academic conflict of interest rules had changed significantly since the 1960s, but that the industry papers were a reminder of why research should be supported by public funding rather than depending on industry funding. Dr. Willett said the researchers had limited data to assess the relative risks of sugar and fat. Given the data we have today, we have shown that refined carbohydrates and especially sugar-sweetened beverages are risk factors for cardiovascular disease. But that type of dietary fat is also important, he said. The JAMA Internal Medicine papers relied on thousands of pages of correspondence and other documents that Kristen E. Kearns, a postdoctoral fellow at the USCF, discovered in the archives at Harvard and the University of Illinois and other libraries. The documents show that in 1964, John Hixon, a top sugar industry executive, discussed a plan with others in the industry to shift public opinion through our research and information and legislative programs. At the time, studies had begun pointing to a relationship between high sugar diets and the country's high rates of heart disease. At the same time, other scientists, including the prominent Minnesota physiologist Ansel Keys, were investigating a competing theory that it was saturated fat and dietary cholesterol that posed the biggest risk for heart disease. Mr. Hixon proposed countering the alarming findings on sugar with industry-funded research. Then we can publish the data and refute our detractors, he wrote. In 1965, Mr. Hixon enlisted the Harvard researchers to write a review that would debunk the anti-sugar studies. He paid them a total of $6,500, the equivalent of $49,000 today. Mr. Hixon selected the papers for them to review and made it clear he wanted the result to favor sugar. Harvard's Dr. Hextad reassured the sugar executives, "We are well aware of your particular interest," he wrote, "and we'll cover this as well as we can." As they worked on their review, the Harvard researchers shared and discussed early drafts with Mr. Hixon, who responded that he was pleased with what they were writing. The Harvard scientists had dismissed the data on sugar as weak and given far more credence to the data implicating saturated fat. "Let me assure you, this is quite what we had in mind, and we look forward to its appearance in print," Mr. Hixon wrote. After the review was published, the debate about sugar and heart disease died down, while low-fat diets gained the endorsement of many health authorities, Dr. Glantz said. By today's standards, they behaved very badly, he said. Damn. Very badly. That's how they behaved. It was so badly. It was very badly. They were little bad, naughty boys and girls, maybe. They were bad, naughty boys and girls. You know, and to be honest, it doesn't matter. Hey, look, if you're looking for, if you want to do what Hollywood billionaires are doing, fuck working out. Fuck doing hard things. You can call your doctor and see if you're fucking eligible for Ozempic. And I forget what the other one is. They have a higher dose one, which is called something else. But you could be eligible for fucking Ozempic, dude. And if you don't know what Ozempic is, it's a fucking injection. It's a medication they're giving type 2 diabetics, which, I mean, let's be honest. If you're a type 2 diabetic, you cure that by changes in lifestyle, and that's a factual statement. But a lot of them would rather just say, no, I want to shovel shit into my face, into my mouth hole. It is the only place where I get pleasure. I will not change that. And so, they take Ozempic. You can take Ozempic. It's a medication. Billionaires are taking it. Rich Hollywood people are taking it, which is making other people take it because, well, that's what people do. They see the wealthy and they see the aristocrats doing it. They see the fucking the bourgeoisie doing it, and they want to do it. But they're fucking poor, and they can't get it at a regular pharmacy because it's sold out because the billionaires need it. And I don't even think diabetics are able to get it right now. I heard another podcast talking about it, and I thought that shit was so crazy. I had to fucking talk about it, because honestly, the way it sounds is like this shit is dangerous. I mean, even just Googling it, right? It's like the language, real weight loss with Ozempic. Oh, man. Possible side effects. Let's see. Is Ozempic good for weight loss? Let's just see some of the Google responses. On average, how much weight will I lose with Ozempic? About a third of people who take Ozempic for weight loss will lose 10% or more of their body weight. Most people should expect to lose at least 5% of their starting body weight when using Ozempic for weight loss. Oh, that's not that bad. 10%, you know? Let's see. What exactly does Ozempic do? Ozempic, along with diet and exercise, is proven to improve blood sugar in adults with type 2 diabetes. In adults with type 2 diabetes and known heart disease, Ozempic reduces the risk of major cardiovascular events such as stroke, heart attack, or death. Oh, well. Look who showed up to the party. I'll take fucking Ozempic reduces the risk of major cardiovascular events, such as stroke, heart attack, or death. Funny that this fucking medication should be gaining popularity at a time when we are seeing unprecedented rates of cardiovascular events such as stroke, heart attacks, and death. All over sports and healthy young athletes, kids, people getting myocarditis. Wonder if that's helped. Lowers blood sugar and A1C. You know what I mean? Let's see. What foods should be avoided in Ozempic diet? Fried foods and fatty foods, such as fast food and foods high in sugar. Oh, touching on just what we touched on, tend to be the toughest for your body to digest and will most likely to cause nausea while taking GLP-1 medications. Oh man, semaglutide. I guess that's what it's called. You know, apparently the way that this shit works is you take it and it makes your body not want to eat. It makes your body not hungry for those types of foods, any types of foods. Let's see. Will Ozempic reduce belly fat? Because that's what we care about. Can a non-diabetic take Ozempic for weight loss? Ozempic currently isn't approved for weight loss by people without diabetes, but across most of the phase 3 trials studying it for this purpose, a study showed results in a 15-18% weight loss in adults who are overweight or obese. Oh, freebie, dude, magic pill. Hell yeah. That's what we like. That's what we want. We don't want to do any work. We just want a magic pill. We don't have to do shit. I don't want to do shit. I just want a magic pill. But then again, it's like, do you really just want to be skinny? I mean, will you even be skinny? If you're 300 pounds, 15%, you're talking about 10% is 30. 5% of that would be 15, so you're talking about 45 pounds. So you're from 300 to 250. You could do that just from not drinking soda. Let's see. What happens if you overeat on Ozempic? If you take too much Ozempic, you could develop severe hypoglycemia, low blood sugar. In the event of an overdose, call your health care provider. Okay. Can I drink alcohol while taking Ozempic? If your blood sugar levels are controlled with Ozempic, having an occasional drink should be fine. Try to limit your alcohol intake and avoid binge drinking. Overconsumption of alcohol could affect your blood sugar levels and increase your risk of hypoglycemia. How long does it take for Ozempic to start working? Right away, bitch. Your blood glucose levels should start to fully decline within the first week. Start using Ozempic with your regular maintenance dose. Could take 8 weeks or longer. Damn, there's a lot of fucking, a lot of questions. Does it cause hair loss? No. Does it affect blood sugar or blood pressure? Okay. Can you stop Ozempic abruptly? Do not stop using Ozempic without talking to your doctor. If you stop using it, your blood sugar levels may fucking increase. Okay? All right? Don't fucking stop taking it without talking to your doctor. Okay? Can it cause heart problems? Symptoms of a regular heartbeat, caused by diabetic retinopathy? No. Okay. Why do I feel better on a Ozempic? What a question. Like, did Kim Kardashian write this question? Because as I'm reading it, that's all I can think of is billionaires that are using Ozempic for weight loss. I think of Kim Kardashian saying, I just don't know why. I just feel better. Why do I feel better on this Ozempic right now? What alcohol can I drink with Ozempic? Damn. It may be best to limit alcohol to one intake drink per day as a woman, maximum. That's all I'm going to really go into on the Ozempic. You should check that shit out if you're somebody that doesn't want to do any work and wants to potentially risk, if you ever come off, risk staying on it, not wanting to ever eat again and maybe, like, just not eating ever and getting enough nutrients, or getting off of it and then developing some weird eating disorder because you stopped your receptors from knowing to be hungry. So they think maybe they've been starving, and now your fucking receptors are like, eat, eat. We don't know when we'll eat again ever. Just eat it all. And you probably gain more weight than you lost originally. And then you want to get back on Ozempic, and it'll be a fucking whole cycle. And you'll really just, if you just, you know, ate properly, fucking, you know, practice some restraint on some of the shit you put in your fucking mouth hole, you'd be good. You'd be fucking good. But, you know, most people don't want to do that. They just want to take Ozempic and rock and roll. You know? So, let's switch it up here. Lots been going on. We've had, you know, we had the darkest day in Brazilian history. January 9th, which funny. I don't know how old people are or if you remember if they still do this. I doubt they do, but I don't watch enough Frigo TV to know. Back in the day, sorry, I just got to bring my joint back to life. Back in the day when like a big movie would come out and they would, when that was in theaters, there'd be like some straight to DVD version, right? And like it'd be like of like whatever one of like the big movies were. It'd be like 40-Year-Old Virgin came out. There was a straight to DVD one that was like 40-Year-Old Guy Who Only Had Sex One Time. You know? Like a clear just like rip off B version of the fucking main movie. And when I saw this Brazilian shit, first of all, this whole election leading up to the whole fucking electoral path leading up to this election between Bolsonaro, who has continuously been called the Brazilian Trump, right? I know some Brazilians and that's what they do. They hate Trump and they hate Bolsonaro, and they hate them the same for the same reasons. And it is quite humorous to me. You know, the dude Lula is a literal criminal, just got out of prison and like went through the whole fucking rigmarole they did with Joe Biden to be like 50 people showed up to his rally, literally like a million Brazilians showing up to fucking Bolsonaro's. Like, it was just, like, super rigged. You know, like, we want the fucking source code. It's the same Dominion voting machines. Like, you got fucking all of the major players in the Democratic Party supporting Lula, not fucking Brazilian Trump, Bolsonaro. You know, and it's fucking crazy. Dude, they had, like, a Capitol riot on January 9th, instead of January 6th, they had their darkest day in Brazilian history, January 9th. They even had a fucking Brazilian, I can't remember the guy's name, and I'm not going to look him up because he's not worth it, but the, like, Antifa dude who was wearing the fucking horns that would go to all the BLM rallies, but then also was at the Capitol, and he was in there for a photo shoot in, like, the main room wearing his fucking, you know, American war paint and Buffalo Viking hat or whatever he was fucking doing. I forget his name. Maybe he's in jail now with the other fucking guys. Maybe he's not. I don't know. He was an actor. I do know that. Like a literal actor, that guy from America, the Brazilian guy, probably, if I had to guess. But he had the same face paint. Could he have just been a guy looking for his claim to fame, his 50 minutes? Sure. Right. But if you're making a B-movie ripoff of The Darkest Day in American History, January 6th, then you have to do it all the way in Brazil for the B version. So I guess I think I also heard, too, that they were, like, talking about trying to extradite Bolsonaro from Mar-a-Lago, Trump's spot in Florida. Like, he's apparently been hiding out since the election. But this fucking, their Capitol building riot, literally, apparently, everything was cleared out. Everyone was cleared out. It was like an empty-ass building, and everyone just did their own personal tour. The Brazilian taxpayers who pay taxes for that building, I guess. I think that's how their system works, I'm sure, I guess. And, so yeah, they're having, like, their whole revolution. They want the fucking source code. From what I can see, it looks like they're going harder than we did. So I hope they're able to accomplish their mission. And then maybe Brazil will become the new symbol of freedom, as they are allied with Russia and China. It's like, I think they, I'm pretty sure they are. They were in that anti-COVID shit for real. Let's lighten it up too. Chiefs fan, Chiefaholic. My guy, Chiefaholic. He's a guy, he wears a wolf costume. I guess he's been going all the Chief costume. Apparently, down in Oklahoma, he was trying to figure out a way to pay for this playoff ticket to get a good seat for the playoffs, keep his Chiefs streak alive. He's the reason why they've been going this far. And they wondered where he's fucking been at. And he's been in jail. He stopped tweeting. He got arrested. He was wearing his wolf mask. They don't know if it's the same one, according to the article I read. They don't know if it's the same one he wears at the Chiefs games, but they think it is. He went in there with his full Chiefs attire and the wolf costume, and they don't know if it's the same one, but it is one. And so they found him. They arrested him. He's been arrested. He's in prison. They let him dress up as the wolf. It's like a furry thing, and with new laws, he identifies as the Chiefsaholic wolf, so they have to put a doggy litter, but they have to walk him like a wolf dog, and he poops in the prison yard wearing his Chiefs jersey and sunglasses. He has filed the arms of the sunglasses into shanks, though, so he will stab a bitch. New York City weed is about to be a bloodbath. A bloodbath. New York illegal fucking weed is about to be a bloodbath. New York has been doing all sorts of wild fucking shit. And nobody knows why. Why does New York want to do some dumb stuff in regards to their legal weed market? Now, if you don't know what New York has been doing, New York City has a billion fucking bodegas, and they've all turned into fucking trap spots. Right, most of you that listen are probably in the Maryland, D.C., Virginia area, and are familiar with the I-71 and all the shops. Myself included, at one point had one. We were kind of like the second generation pioneers. Like, we really kind of kicked the door open in some cool ways, and you know, shit got a little crazy, and it is what it is. But New York, it's like that on steroids. But there's an article, it says New York's illegal weed dispensary is about to experience a bloodbath. And this is what regulated weed looks like. This is what taxation without representation, real representation, looks like. And I'm not talking about the representation that they talk about in movies like if it's a movie about a trans person, it should be a trans person playing the trans person in the movie, even though it's fucking acting, and Scarlett Johansson is a better actress than probably just some random trans person who's in a multi-million dollar movie just because they're a trans person playing a trans person. I don't know. Maybe it doesn't make sense to me, but whatever. Anyway, I digress. I don't know what that has to do with anything. Police in New York City will launch a major crackdown on unlicensed weed shops in the state legislature. I mean, in New York City, you could be in Times Square, fucking Manhattan, and just set up a little table with your backpack and some fucking Smokies Focus jars and some edibles on the table and just start trapping it out. And the cops are just going to look at you. Yo, the Weed World edibles vans that have been fucking selling fake edibles in Times Square for years and years and years are finally actually selling weed out of them. And then the trucks are getting confiscated, which to me is like, it just touches my heart and spirit in such a special way because I've hated those trucks for a long time. And I've actually really hated them. So that makes me feel good that the Weed World edibles trucks are getting confiscated. But only because they sold fake weed for so long that, fuck you. $20 lollipops that were just lollipops. Crazy. They launch a major crackdown on unlicensed weed shops, and the state legislature will propose legislation further empowering law enforcement to crack down on the illicit shops, officials said during a New York City Council hearing yesterday. The Council's Committee on Consumer and Worker Protection held a hearing Wednesday, which its members spoke with the city's sheriff's office, NYPD Department of Health, and other local agencies about a proliferation of unlicensed smoke shops selling weed in New York City. Quote, the task force is continuing. Our operations are increasing, and we are doubling, if not tripling, the enforcement that we have, New York City Sheriff Anthony Miranda said. We want them to know the type of enforcement that's going to go on so they understand that we're not going away. The war on drugs is still here, people. And just because you voted for legal weed does not mean that it's legal weed. We're talking about regulated weed. And in regulated weed, what we're talking about is those who pay big bucks to politicians want their market share to be cornered. They don't want your entrepreneurial spirit. They don't want you to start a fucking business and do it without the highest fucking regulations that only they can afford. They want you to be pushed out, you dumb fuck. What the fuck? This isn't weed for the people. This is weed for the fucking people who have bread and can afford to run such an operation and be taxed to death and make slim-ass fucking margins in their race to the bottom because they don't give a fuck about anything else other than having their share and you not having any fucking bit of it. And what would make anyone possibly think that things in New York City would be anything other than some Trump-type bullshit? Back to the article. While the state's most populous city has long boasted an illustrious underground weed market, its brick-and-mortar storefronts that sell untested cannabis, in addition to untaxed cigarettes and illegal flavored vape cartridges, have increased exponentially since the state legalized recreational adult use in 2021, and only one legal shop has opened since then. I'm pretty sure the one legal shop is like only allowed to sell vape cards. Like, they can't sell any flower, just vape cards. It's kind of crazy. You can't quote me on that because I haven't spoke with any of my New York fam in a while, and I didn't do enough research prior to this recording this episode into what all of their shenanigans are, but I do know that they're sitting on pretty sure I spoke about it a couple episodes ago. They're sitting on like fucking $350 million worth of weed. I don't know who fucking comes up with these estimates, but there's like apparently mad growers in New York that are growing all this weed and they can't sell it. So it's just like sitting around. And I'm imagining like conveyor belts with weed, like backing up and the weed's falling off onto the floor. And there's fucking idiots in lab coats and hairnets, like, we don't know what to fucking do. You know, and there's like, just like, they're just like trying to like shove it off the floor into fucking big, like 20 pound fucking turkey bags and fucking just throwing them into a fucking room. We can't sell this shit anyway. I will fucking remediate it and make it into carts. You know, turn it into distillate for carts. Yeah, so the group, oh shit. Mayor Eric Adams in December, let's just talk about Mayor Eric Adams, this fuck. He's the one that, like, literally there's like a fucking outbreak of, like, polio contaminated water. And this motherfucker's making commercials like, I love my New York City tap water. I don't go any fucking where without it. Drink your New York City tap water. Don't go anywhere without it, New York. It's great. It tastes great. It's healthy. And it's water. Drink it. And then it's like the next day after this ad's fucking all over the place. It's like, polio fucking outbreak in New York water. It's like, fuck you, Mayor Eric Adams. You fuck. Mayor Eric Adams in December launched a pilot program as interagency task force to address. The interagency task force means feds, sheriffs, city cops, county cops, anyone that wants to fucking be involved. Address the sharp increase in illegal smoke shops. The task force includes the Sheriff's Office, New NYPD, Department of Consumer and Worker Protection, and the Office of Cannabis Management. Okay, so those are the people that actually are. I wasn't that far off. The group has identified the least 1,200 illicit weed shops, Miranda said, and has confiscated about $6 million of illegal products, including 600 pounds of weed, resulting in civil and criminal referrals. What's crazy is, like, how much Delta 9 and fucking of this weird hemp shit are they also taking? Because I know that they took a bunch of CBD shit from us as well in D.C. That shit was crazy. And they don't give a fuck. You think that you're fucking getting that shit back in New York City? Hell no. You think those cops are not confiscating shit and you think all that shit's getting logged the fuck in? Hell no. There's fucking illicit shops that are good to go. They've identified 1,200. They probably identified even more than that. Task force members are identifying possibly illicit shops through complaints from the OCM, government officials, and other sources. Council members Gail Brewer, who chairs the Committee on Oversight and Investigation, said the illegal shops cause a host of problems. She said products from these stores often contain dangerous contaminants, and the illegal shops openly operating with no consequences threaten the survival of legal operators. Threaten the survival of illegal operators. These people only want their market share. They just want you the fuck out of there, and they don't care if you're criminalized for it or not. They just want you the fuck out of there. Who have to pay hefty taxes and compliance fees. What the fuck did I just say? I just said these motherfuckers can afford to pay the fees and i.e. the government oversight, which means they want you the fuck out of there, dude. They're paying all this bread. Fuck you, she said. Brewer said there are 11 illegal cannabis retailers operating within 10-block radius of the state's only legal adult-use dispensary, which is run by Nonprofit Housing Works. I gotta look into that. Nonprofit Housing Works owns the only legal state adult-use dispensary. We gotta see what the fuck is up with that. I will be back, circling back. I'm gonna do my best Jen Psaki impression to be back, circling back about that in the next episode. Additionally, criminals are capitalized. Oh, hold on, wait. The tidal wave of unlicensed sellers in the state's largest market threatens to undermine, I'm afraid, the laudable effort, the MRTA attempts, Brewer said. These illegal stores seem to be sucking up revenue that should be going to licensed dispensaries that still can't open due to state delays. So if they can't open for the state delays, who the fuck is going to fucking be providing the cannabis? Is it just that you want nobody doing it? Stop delaying the fucking legal spots. What the fuck? Additionally, criminals are capitalizing on the illicit smoke shop proliferation task force members found. Data shows 593 robberies of smoke shops in 2022,
a 137% increase from 250 the previous year. Zion! People coming up. Miranda and other task force members told city councilors there were little they could do to immediately shut down shops selling untested weed. It's cracking me up that they keep calling it weed. They can confiscate illegal illicit cannabis, report violations to licensing agencies, and file a nuisance abatement case above the store. But that process can take up to 2 years. During a public comment session, State Senator Liz Krueger, led MRTA sponsor in the Senate, said she understands frustration over the illegal shops. Krueger said last year introduced a bill that would expand the OCM's authority to seize illicit marijuana and allowed the State Department of Taxation and Finance to penalize people selling weed illegally. It also would have doubled civil penalties for any person knowingly who possesses illicit cannabis. Krueger admitted the state has been slow in creating and implementing policy to launch New York's legal cannabis market, but said the state legislature will be taking up weed enforcement in the 2023 session. So they will be enforcing illegal, quote-unquote, cannabis, illicit cannabis distribution, but they will not be prioritizing the legal market in any way, shape, or form. So if you are a cannabis person, a person that utilizes cannabis in New York City, fuck you, is what they're saying. We're going to get rid of the places in which you do get this illicit weed, untested or otherwise, and we're not going to do anything about the legal market. We're going to be implementing new expanded laws that give the state more tools, and our police departments, and our sheriffs, and our marshals, Krueger said. These stores are harming the entire model that we've been trying to build and establish across the state. During a public comment period, many people conveyed their worries that illegal shops are popping up near schools and selling to underage kids. Oh my God, propaganda. However, two representatives of the Yemeni American Merchants Association said that a lot of bodega owners, many of whom are new to the country, don't understand what is and isn't legal when it comes to cannabis and need more education. Reasonable. Paula Collins, an attorney and accountant whose clients include smoke shop owners, suggested the states consider create a transitional license for shops currently selling weed legally, but would like to sell tested weed lawfully. Doing so could generate some $60 million per year in sales taxes for the city, Collins estimated. The city is broke. Can we really afford to turn away that money without making a genuine effort to see if we could recapture it? Collins asked. It's a very valid question, for sure. Very valid fucking question. A lot of valid questions. For anybody that's interested in New York cannabis and the flyest cannabis community cultural experience New York City has to offer, I would advise checking out the Happy Monkey. Anybody that's been following me for any length of time should know about them by now. But if you have not, please check out the Happy Monkey. Tell them the Lord sent you. And say what up, smoke a fat one for me. And if you're in New York, maybe they'll let you come see them. I don't know how that works anymore, but you know, damn, I'm like already a fucking hour in. We've been fucking going hard. I'm gonna fucking cut it short. I think we'll make this a two-parter. Be back tomorrow with another fucking episode. There's just so much shit to fucking keep talking about. That I haven't even, I totally forgot to even look up this other shit. Yeah, so, look, we're now in. Share this shit with your friends. Share this shit with your fucking family. I don't give a fuck what you do, who you share it with. Just fucking share it. It's important. We talk about real shit. We talk about some fucking fun shit. We try to have a good time because to think this world is just a shit place and constantly have a negative attitude about it, I mean, let's fucking make a joke. Let's not take some shit too seriously. Let's find some ways to take our health and becoming better seriously while having a good time and enjoying our life. Because in the day-to-day, when I walk outside, shit isn't as crazy as they say it is. My day-to-day, other than the fact that food and gas are up considerably from what they were a couple of years ago, I'm grateful for every moment that I have sucking air on this fucking plane of existence. And I highly recommend that you put your gratitude into action as well. if you would like to support this podcast, I got links in my Instagram bio, at Lord Baltimore, at Elliot Aces, either one. You can get some supplements from First Form. Support your motherfucking self. Get your motherfucking vitamins. Get your glucose disposal agent if you want something to non-Ozempic fucking kill yourself and would like to regulate some of the carbs and blood glucose you have going on. Might be a product that you check out. I'd also advise checking out Microfactor in pill or powdered form, alongside some OptiGreens 50, which has got the glycemic balance blend, which will help regulate your blood sugar and also has like 9 billion colony-forming units of probiotics. So you can get some good gut health happening, some good bacteria, stop fucking inflaming your gut, causing leaky gut syndrome, giving your Crohn's and your ulcerative colitis an excuse to act up. Balance that shit out, man. Get you some OptiGreens, get you some Microfactor. If you'd like to fucking get swole, get some level one protein. Just increasing your protein daily and hitting a daily protein goal is naturally going to regulate your hormones, you crazy bastards. We have so many chemicals that are coming in through our skin and our water, fucking everywhere. That shit's out of whack. And most people are not getting enough protein because the daily recommended amount of protein is so little. Most people think peanut butter is a protein source. It's not. It's a carbs and fat source, which is fine, but account for your protein otherwise. God damn it. God damn it. But I love y'all. Stay safe. Baltimore out.